Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Philadelphia, and at age 2, while watching an episode of Sesame Street featuring a guest appearance by the great concert violinist Itzhak Perlman, she decided to become a violinist. She won the Sphinx Junior Division competition in 2003 and has just won the Sphinx Senior Division competition. She's performed as a solo artist with symphony orchestras including Atlanta, Detroit, Cleveland, the Boston Pops, and even Carnegie Hall. Her name, Ilana Uriosti. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with America's premier young violinist, Ilana Uriosti. Ilana, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be on the show.
Can we start by you talking about your mom and your dad?
Well, I should mention that neither of them are musicians, so I'm kind of like a family mutant in that regard. My father works for Lockheed Martin, and my mom, she is a lawyer, but she's no longer practicing. She currently works for a company in Philadelphia called National Analysts, which deals with, I believe, marketing, research, data, compilation.
And
being a musician, it's sort of as far away from what I do as possible. So,
what have you learned from them?
Well, I've learned, you know, since I chose a path that was largely unfamiliar to them, the fact that they were so supportive was even more remarkable. Well, not remarkable. I mean, they're wonderful people, but they just have encouraged me always, no matter what I do, to do it wholeheartedly. And, you know, if this is the path I wanted to choose, they were all for it as long as I really devoted myself to it and just continued loving it, which I do.
Can you tell us about the time you're 2 years old and you're watching Sesame Street?
Well, this is, of course, somewhat vague in my mind because I was so young, but I do bits and pieces occasionally float back to me. But the story goes that I was watching an episode of Sesame Street when I was about 2 years old, and the violinist Itzhak Perlman came on the show, and he played something. I don't know, he was on with Elmo or someone. I just saw it and immediately felt a connection with it and said, that's what I want to do. And because my parents, you know, since they weren't musicians, they were probably looked aghast at this little two-year-old and encouraged me to wait for a while. So then when I was finally 5 years old in kindergarten, I began taking lessons in the Suzuki program.
Have you ever met Itzhak Perlman?
Actually, I have. It was the most exciting. I was playing a concert. I was playing in an orchestra in Memphis. I guess it was last year. And he was a guest soloist. And I was just sitting in the orchestra, and he finally came in for the rehearsal. And I felt like I was 2 years old again. I was so excited. I had never met him, actually never even heard him live. But after, like, the performance was unbelievably emotional for me. I was just sitting there thinking, oh my God, he's the reason I play the violin. He's the reason I'm here. And, you know, this is my idol 10 feet away from me. It was so exciting. And I had him sign my music afterwards. I must have acted like a big groupie, but it was very, very exciting for me.
Did you tell him about being 2 years old and watching him?
He was pretty swamped at that moment, so I didn't really have any time for one-on-one conversation. But
when you're in the grade school, you would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you'd practice for an hour, then you'd jump on the bus, go to school, come home, do your homework, and play again before dinner and then after dinner. Did you do this every day?
I did. I mean, it's one curse of having public school that starts so early. I mean, I've always been very much a morning person, so it seems logical for me to, I didn't mind waking up early, so wake up, eat breakfast, I would do my warm-ups and practice, and I mean, when I was really, really young, when I was first starting out in Suzuki, when I was first exploring this path, I would just come home after school, but when it became clear that, you know, this is something I was pretty serious about as young as age 7, I just knew I would function better in the morning, so I would get up, get some stuff done, and then after school, I would, you know, I might have actually come home and practiced first, because I found that to be much more enjoyable than doing my homework, so I probably went to the violin first and then did my homework before dinner.
Did you use a regular size violin back then?
No. I think I started on a 1/16 violin, which basically looks like a toy, and just gradually worked my way up. But yeah, I was a very small little girl, so there was no way I could. No child could start out on a full size instrument comfortably, I don't think.
You're 20 years old. You've played with the Boston Pops. You've played at Carnegie Hall. What's been the key to your success?
Well, I think that in my case, I was very lucky to figure out early on that there was something I loved and I wanted to make a life out of it, which was obviously music. And I feel very, very fortunate that I was presented with permission early on. So, you know, it's been my duty since then to sort of live up to how much I love it. So, you know, it's one thing to just love music, but if you really want to pursue a life in it, there you have no choice but to just work as hard as you can at it. Spend the hours in the practice room every day, doing your scales and all of your warm-up stuff and going through, like, learning all of your repertoire. And then the payoff is incredible. You know, you get to play at all these venues with all these amazing orchestras and these meet wonderful people. And I just feel lucky that what I do on a daily basis stems from my number one passion in life.
As we go to break, let's listen to Ilana perform. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Ilana Uriosti, who has just won the Sphinx Senior Division competition. Ilana, can you tell us about your first solo appearance with an orchestra?
When I was 13 years old, actually when I was 12 years old, I won this competition that takes place in Philadelphia every year, the Albert M. Greenfield Student Competition. And there are multiple divisions, and I was in the children's division, and the winner of each division gets to play with the Philadelphia Orchestra, which for me had been, growing up outside of Philadelphia, it had been a dream of mine since I was 6 years old. You know, I saw pictures of the Academy of Music, which was the venue that they were playing at that time. And, you know, I fantasized about being on stage there and seeing the beautiful burgundy hall and the painted ceiling. And so when I found out that I won, I was just, you know, that was like my greatest success to date. And I just remember it so well. I picked out my dress and I would match the upholstery in the hall, and I was so nervous, but walking out there and looking up at the ceiling and seeing the beautiful chandelier that I, just being on that stage and thinking about everyone who had played there before me and getting to play with the Philadelphia Orchestra, it was so unbelievable. One thing that made it slightly more comforting is the person who was conducting that that concert happened to be my youth orchestra conductor at the time. So it was nice to walk out and see his wonderful, inviting smile, and that helped me through it a little bit. But it was amazing, and it sort of whet my appetite for future performances.
How many hours a day do you practice?
Oh boy. Well, the number has changed over the years. When I was young, I started, relatively gradually. I one, and then two, and then three, and I probably leveled off somewhere around 4 hours for a couple of years. And then when I decided that I wanted to prepare to audition for a conservatory, the number started climbing. And, I went to summer festivals where basically all one did was practice. So I got a feel for what it was like to practice 7 hours a day. And then I realized when preparing for my college auditions, it was the first time that I had to have a lot of repertoire in my fingers at one time. And for me at that age, there was no way to accomplish that but to practice 7 or 8 hours every day. So there was that phase of my life. And since getting into conservatory, I've learned how to be slightly more efficient and gotten used to having to have multiple big works in my hands at one time. So at this point, it's pretty much leveled off to about 3 or 4 hours a day. But it varies depending on, if I'm preparing for something big or if I'm not.
You study under multiple teachers concurrently. Why?
Well, actually, that's been something that I've done almost my entire life. My first two teachers who I studied with from the age, I started with them when I was 5 years old and was with both of them until I was about 12. They lived in the same house, and they were pretty well established pair from what I understood. And all their most of their students studied with both of them. So I just started that, and it for me it never has seemed like a conflict of interest because they they were very well aware of what the other was doing, and they really fed off one another. And I think if you're smart about it, you can take the best of both people and sort of work with the best of what they both give you. And that's been the case. Two other sets of teachers of mine, I've had two other situations where I've worked with two people simultaneously. And for me, I like the variety. And at Curtis, for example, at where I'm in school, most students study with two teachers because the faculty some members aren't there on a week-to-week basis. And so if you didn't study with two people, you might wind up without a lesson for a couple weeks. So, but I like having the different viewpoints and just getting to experience multiple points of view. I think it's very beneficial.
You won the Sphinx Junior Competition at age 16 in 2003. Can you share that experience?
That was probably the first major competition that I had participated in, aside from the one in, Little Ones in Philadelphia. That was actually a very stressful time for me because that very closely preceded my college audition. So I was completely nervous for my audition for Curtis. And I was actually sort of tentative about whether I wanted to go to Sphinx, whether it would, be a distraction or whether it would just, whether I wouldn't be as focused. But it turned out to be the most wonderful thing I could have done. I was playing a lot at the Sphinx competition, because I had to prepare my repertoire for that, which nicely overlapped with what I had to prepare for Curtis. But the nature of the competition is such that you sort of forget that it's a competition pretty quickly. The staff is so wonderful and sweet. The competitors are anything but competitors. They're just nice, wonderful people who are basically a family, being sort of introduced to that network of people has been one of the most invaluable experiences. So what I'm trying to say is when I got there, I felt like it was like a family reunion rather than a stressful competition. So I got to be surrounded by music, but my mind was sort of put at ease, just being around them. And then winning was a huge bonus. Almost, you know, I was having so much fun there and felt relaxed, but at the same time I was feeling very secure violinistically, and getting to win and then playing at the Detroit Symphony Hall was quite an experience.
I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Let's listen to the magic of Elena Urioste.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Elena Urioste, who this past February won the Sphinx Senior Division competition. Elena, can you share with us what's the Sphinx organization?
The Sphinx organization is just about the most miraculous organization I think I could possibly be a part of. It's it is an organization geared towards diversifying classical music, and there are many, many components to the organization, one of which is the competition they have every year for Black and Latino string players, and the winners and the laureates of that, basically they get tremendous performance opportunities with orchestras across the country and recital opportunities, and they do a ton of outreach. So basically every city that we play in, we go into a couple of the public schools and do, you know, two or three sessions for all these kids. And so they get to experience classical music when they may not have otherwise had a chance. And then they're just expanding on a daily basis. There's all these preparatory programs, summer programs, just all sorts of things so that it diversifies both the audiences in classical music and the people that you see on stage. And Black and Latinos are a very, very small percentage of the classical music world, which the Sphinx organization hopes to change and is already extremely successful in doing so.
When we come back, we'll ask Elena about the founder of the Sphinx organization, Aaron Dworkin, and what he's meant in her life. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Elena Urioste. Aaron Dworkin is the founder of the Sphinx organization. He's 36 years old. He was born to a white Irish Catholic mother and a Black father in upstate New York, and was adopted by white Jewish parents when he was 2 years old. Elena, he also began playing the violin at age 5, and while at the U of M as a student, he started the Sphinx organization. What has Aaron Dworkin meant to your life, Elena Urioste?
Well, if there's anyone who personifies just the act of making a dream come true, it's Aaron. I mean, Mr. Dworkin. He had this idea that he saw that he was a minority in classical music. He saw how few people there were who looked like him playing classical music and listening to classical music, and he decided that he was going to change that. Simple. And He's such a charismatic man, an unbelievably eloquent speaker, charming, and just he has built this organization that is well on its way to doing exactly what he has envisioned. He knows how to deliver his message. He knows how to inspire people through his speaking, and just when you, I've gotten many opportunities to be around him at both competitions, at the various galas they've done, and he's just always, I just always see him thinking, like, how is he going to, you know, what's he going to do next? But at the same time, he seems to enjoy life immensely and has a great time doing all of this stuff, and I think it's because he's doing what he loves, and he's making this unbelievable dream come true, and he's just so charismatic, and it's hard not to, he's sort of like, there's a like whirlwind of inspiration around him, I think, and it's remarkable to be around him and get to be a part of what he's making possible.
This past February, you're 20 years old, and you win the Sphinx Senior Division competition. What did you think when you'd realized you'd won?
Well, it's funny. In you don't think about this, but when you're up there and when they were announcing the results, they do it sort of backwards. So when they announced the second place winner, I you know, by deductive reasoning, I figured out that I had won, and I don't know what kind of reaction I was expecting, but I had, it was like this very unusual sensation. It was like my stomach just sort of, not even dropped, it just kind of oozed, and I just felt like this wave of something hit me. I don't know, I was obviously extremely excited, but it was crazy this year because they had film crews everywhere filming the whole thing and a packed audience, like nearly 200 people on the orchestra stage behind me. So I was just surrounded by all these faces. And then they said, the announcer said these words, and I just kind of was dumbfounded a little bit. I hope it didn't come across that way. But
I was in the audience that afternoon, and one, I marveled at your ability, but equally so, I marveled at your stage presence, your smile, your enthusiasm, the confidence that you exuded. How did you ever get that?
Well, the smile, I have years of dental work to thank. But I don't know. It's not, I feel like stage presence, I certainly don't mean to sound conceited, but I feel like stage presence is it's something that you're born with. I don't know. I mean, you can certainly work on improving things all the time, you know, the obvious, stand up straight, smile at the audience, you know, bow graciously, and I hope those things come across, but for me, it's sort of like, it's just basic instinct. I've never thought I've done anything particularly extraordinary on stage. I just come out, I smile, I bow, I shake the conductor's hand, I don't know, and I feel very at home on the stage. It's where I love to be the most. Otherwise, I might want to consider changing my profession. But I really like being in front of an audience, and I love being in front of an orchestra. And so my natural reaction is to look happy. I think, I think performers are the best when they are themselves, and, you know, to act like a beauty pageant winner, it might be slightly excessive, but I think just look like you enjoy being there and embrace the moment, I think, is the most important thing.
Do you ever get nervous?
Oh, yeah. So really, everything I just said is the front. No, just kidding. I do. I've had nerves my whole life, and they don't really seem to be going anywhere. It depends on the situation, but I it's safe to say I get nervous in some capacity for every concert I do. The adrenaline kicks in, and I think for me, the trick has been learning how to work with the nerves instead of, like, try and fend them off. Because at this point, I realize they are a part of who I am, and I can't really do anything to prevent that. So I always try and keep breathing, keep the oxygen circulating. I kind of try and work with my ridiculously loud pounding heart. And I just close my eyes and really try and center myself, and use the adrenaline as a good thing, something that will maybe inspire spontaneity or, just give an extra kick to the performance.
Some people would view that you've had a fairy tale life. Have you ever had any setbacks?
Oh, of course. I mean, I have been very, very fortunate in, you know, having the support that I do from my parents, and I had a great childhood and wonderful musical training. I think if you're in a field like music, becomes such a sort of metaphysical struggle. I mean, it's such an abstract thing. Like, it's this art. It is art. I don't know, how do you describe music? I don't know. And then to make sort of a business out of it can be somewhat confusing for an artist or a musician. And balancing the practical sides of music with the artistic sides is always a struggle. For instance, I mean, just practicing over and over and over to do something. So you practice so that you can feel comfortable on stage and comfortable with the music, and you practice, you know, you practice the technical aspects, and then you want to, sorry, I'm not explaining this very well. You practice techniques so that you have the tools at your disposal, so that you can convey a message from the composer, and you can hopefully, in addition to that, convey your own message. And it sounds kind of, you know, very like a flaky thing to do, but it's very difficult to really say exactly what you mean on stage. And when things aren't going exactly right, it can be absolutely devastating. I mean, I've had periods in my life where, because music is my first love and my first passion, and at some points it's the only thing I'm doing, if I'm having a bad practice week or if I have, you know, a series of bad lessons, it's just crushing because it's what I live for. And if it's not going well, then it's hard to bounce back. I mean, I can cite an example. Recently, I did a major international competition, and I did not advance to the second round, and I was completely expecting that. I was prepared for that. I felt I deserved not to advance. But afterwards, just learning how to deal with this failure of sorts, it's definitely something you have to learn. You have to learn how to bounce back and keep going and reassure yourself that this is, you know, I had to find ways of delving into music again that somehow made it different or more inspiring. And it was a very difficult couple of months, my first semester of school this year, admittedly. But I went to different people for advice. I played for different people, and gradually I put myself back together. And inevitably there are setbacks, and it's difficult when you're doing one thing in such a concentrated way, but you always have to, you just have to find inspiration within the field and also without.
I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Let's take a listen to Elena's Masterful Talents.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Elena Uriosti, and when she performs, she plays with her eyes closed. Elena, why do you play with your eyes closed?
For me, well, first of all, I should mention that it hasn't always been that way. When I was younger, I had this terrible habit of sort of letting my eyes wander into the audience all over the place. And until someone, I think my mom told me, you know, it's kind of distracting. So I then for a while, I sort of picked a place and focused on it. And then I realized that if I just closed my eyes and sort of really got into the center of the music, it was much easier for me to focus, and I was much less likely to get distracted by whatever was going on in the room. So for me, it's just sort of a concentration mechanism. It helps me really block out everything else.
You talk about visualization. Can you share with our listeners what you mean by visualization?
Well, every performance is different. I mean, if I'm sort of in a panic and I feel like I can't remember what's coming next, I do my best to try and visualize the page of music itself and see if that will provide some sort of map for me. Otherwise, I just kind of try and clear my head, and whatever comes, and I try and whatever the hearing form of visualization is, I try and hear what's coming next, so that I have sort of like little mini goals to work for in my performance, you know, the next measure of music, the next line of music, the next phrase, something like that.
What would you say to a young listener tonight who says, Elena, I've got a huge dream, but I'm afraid to reach for that dream, or I can't perform in front of people, or I'm just afraid of failing?
Well, if you have a dream, then I feel that you owe it to yourself to at least give it a chance. If you have a dream and it's clear that it is just a pipe dream and not, you know, something that you would want to seriously pursue, then that's fine. But if you do have a dream, whether it's to be a ballerina or an artist or a writer, you it's one thing to have a dream, but you need to test it out. You know, you need to put in the hours of hard work to really make it happen. And if you don't do that, then you might always be wondering, well, what if? So I say if you have a goal, if you have a dream, you just give it time. You know, nothing happens overnight. It just stick with it, and you know, then you might want to reassess in a couple of years. But if I hadn't seriously pursued music as I had, I would probably always love it as much as I do, but I might not have had the success that I've had up until this point. So a dream plus hard work, more often than not, will equal success, or at least a wonderful journey.
What do you do when you wake up, you have a performance, and you just don't have that feeling today?
Well, I mean, there are certainly days where I wake up and I take out my violin and it just sounds awful. I do my best. I warm up. I try playing. I just think of various things that teachers have told me over the years, you know, various relaxation tricks, or, you know, do this with my left hand, or relax my shoulder, all of this stuff. And if it's really not happening, just for practice, like on a practice day, I will put the violin down and I will try and go and do something else to inspire me. Like I'll listen to a recording of a great musician, or I'll pick up a great book, or I'll take a walk and try and find something of a different variety to inspire my work day. For a performance, I mean, I've certainly had some bad performances, but the adrenaline that I was talking about before, it generally kicks in and I get excited, and at the very least I can manage to deliver at least an exciting performance. It might sound absolutely terrible, but I would say on the days that you know it's just not working, find some, you know, don't just sit around and do nothing, but find something else to inspire you, I would say.
You regularly visit children in local schools and share with them your love for music. What has these visits taught you, Elena Uriosti?
Kids are the most important part of the creative process. I mean, they ask me questions that, you know, adults would never in a million years dream of asking, but they're the most honest and the most sincere somehow. You know, to hear a 7-year-old girl with Down syndrome ask you why you love to play music, I mean, that just gets to, I think, the core of everything. And seeing the way kids react to, you know, a really fast passage or a really loud noise on the violin, it's so instinctual and it's so pure somehow. And when I can inspire someone else to do it, it makes me want to do it even more, because I know that if I have that ability to make them feel something, then there's no way I could ever give it up myself.
What's next? What are your dreams and goals down the road?
Well, I mean, it might still be a bit of a pipe dream for me, but being a soloist has been something I've never really been able to let go of. So hopefully having won the Sphinx competition in February, the concerts that will come from that will hopefully provide somewhat of a springboard for that. I hope to play with orchestras and give recitals. I would also love to have a chamber ensemble, either like a piano trio or something. And I don't know, I'll probably go on to grad school after I finish at Curtis. But it's all up in the air. I don't know. It's an exciting and somewhat nerve-wracking time, but as long as I'm playing, I'll be okay.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight, Elena?
I think the most important thing is with anyone, with kids and even adults sometimes, is really asking yourself what it is that you love to do or what makes you happy. And follow that. Find a way to turn that desire that you have for something into a lifelong pathway. You know, if you love art, if art is what makes you feel the most like yourself, then become an artist, or, you know, submerge yourself in the arts. Or if you want to be a musician, then be a musician. But to deny yourself the pleasure of doing what you love is just a huge injustice to yourself. To do something just because you have to isn't enough. You know, you should make a life out of what you love the most and stick with it. If your love of something's not going to go away, your perseverance might, but it's best if it doesn't. So just stick with what makes you happy, I think, and you could never go wrong.
Elena, thanks very much for sharing your amazing and inspiring story, and best of luck with your glorious future.
Thank you very much.
Our guest next Sunday will be the radio voice of the Detroit Tigers, Dan Dickerson. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.